This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into a brand new episode of Crossed Up. Anthony Sanfilippo's here. I'm Bob Wankel, and it's spring break here in South Jersey for a lot of the schools. And that means my wife is off, and that means that my kids are at home. So, you know, you may be on this show accompanied by my children who are above me right now upstairs, thumping around and crying and making a lot of noise. So we'll see how this goes, Anthony. But we're here. We got three games to digest. Phillies Braves. Not a lot of good, especially early on. A little bit of good on Easter. Salvage the final game of a three-game set. So let's jump right to it. There's plenty to talk about here. I'm sure fans aren't exactly thrilled this morning. But my main takeaway, I guess, is it could have been a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah. I mean, well, and the question that I asked in my story that is up on Crossing Broad today is, it could have been worse, but could it have been better? Right. I mean, so that's like, to me, I think that that's an interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, you lose 9-3 and 12-4, and they sound like two games that are complete and utter blowouts, and they probably should, you know, yeah, they were never in them on the surface. But really, when you look at it, they could have won the opener if the bullpen doesn't implode. They had a lead in the second game, and Nola stayed in too long and probably and got, you know, torched, and then the bullpen didn't help, you know, keep it in within striking distance. So you look at those two games and say maybe they could have gotten one of those, and then maybe they but then again maybe they got a little lucky to get the third one, right? So, you know, in the end, going 1-2 is probably what they deserved, but maybe it could have been a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that the main thing here is you come out of this weekend and everyone's charged up, everyone's really excited for this, and it's, what do these guys have? You know, they talked a lot in the spring about setting the tone, getting out of the gates fast. You have the Braves come in, and they just get smacked around. They get smacked around on Friday and on Saturday. And I know that you can look at Friday's game and say for six innings, the Phillies kind of controlled things. But, I mean, they absolutely torched that Phillies bullpen on Friday. And then Saturday was a total slop fest. And while I want to say they were in position to have potentially won that game, like kudos to them for getting freed out of the game in the first inning, they stick with Nola probably a little bit too long. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that decision. But the Phillies were essentially gifted those runs in the first inning as well. Nick Castellanos is struck out. The inning's over. He gets a break, and they're able to capitalize on it and keep that inning going. It was a sloppy weekend, I thought, for the Phillies. And even in the game on Sunday, credit to them for coming back. Johan Rojas hustling down the line. They were able to kind of extend the inning and then rally. Great. Shows the Phillies resilience, something that we've talked about the last number of years with this team. But a lot of mistakes. I thought a lot of avoidable mistakes in that game as well. I came away a little bit disappointed. It's not like sky's falling. It's not like I really think it really changes anything as far as the season outlook goes. But kind of a missed opportunity a little bit.
I'll tell you what disappoints me, Bob. You talk about wanting to get off to a fast start. You talk about wanting to, you're tired of the Braves winning the division. You want to beat them and you want to win the division. And then the game is the games are being managed like it's the middle of the summer and you need to get guys certain rest and don't want to go with, you don't want to push this guy. You don't want to go, you know, don't want to burn out the bullpen. And like, it's the first three games of the season, man. Like that's the kind of stuff where I sit there and say, I get this over the long haul of a year, right? If you need to have those kind of times where you need to rest guys and give guys a break and things like that and manage the health of your team so that they are healthy come the playoffs. That's what's made the Phillies so successful in October the last 2 years. So I totally get it. But you're talking about the team, you're playing the team on the first series of the year that you are going to be in direct competition with to win the division. You have to treat these games like everybody's available and everybody's healthy and everybody's right. Look, if somebody's not healthy, I get it. Okay, fine. You got to pull them out. But there's not a player on this team, on this roster, who you sat there and said, oh, that guy can't play because he needs a break, or that guy is, you know, dinged up, you know, whatever. Like, that didn't happen. And so, like, that's the perplexing thing to me. And I could go through several examples of things that happened over the weekend that made me scratch my head. And I think that some of them, if they went the other way, could have resulted in a 2-1 favor of the Phillies winning the series, as opposed to 2-1 in favor of the Braves.
Well, in some ways, if you're going to kind of pin this on the decision-making, you're almost stepping back and looking at it and saying, it's not like the Braves absolutely overwhelmed the Phillies. It's not like this was really the mismatch that it sort of looks like when you look at the hit totals. I mean, Atlanta absolutely buried the Phillies in the first two games in terms of just out-hitting them, out-scoring them. And so when you look at the box scores, you go, these two teams weren't even close with one another. But you think, you're telling me, that this was more about the way it was handled and some of the decision-making.
Look, they could have still lost 2 out of 3 if things were managed differently and handled differently. Still could have ultimately been that, for sure. But I think that they hurt themselves a little bit with this approach of being really, really careful. Look, let's start with opening day.
I mean, they were out hit, Anthony, 32-13 in the first two games. Yeah,
well, they didn't hit well enough in the first two games. They really didn't. Let's be honest. But if you look at it, you pulled Wheeler after 6 innings and you're up 2-0 in that game at that point. So Wheeler has outpitched Strider. Strider pitched well. He pitched really well. He's a tough pitcher, right?
I thought he was excellent. Yeah.
Right? I mean, he was really good. Nevertheless, both of the starters leave the game and you're winning 2-0. So you lose 9-3. Is that a winnable game? Like, to me, it is. That's a winnable game. You have a 2-run lead and you have 9 outs to get. That's a winnable game. I don't care that you lost by 6. It doesn't mean you got blown out of the water, okay? Just the way they had an implode inning out of the bullpen, and that changed the dynamics of it. I'm not sitting here advocating for saying, well, Zach Wheeler should have pitched the 7th inning. And I get why he was taken out. He was kind of at a 90-pitch pitch limit, right? Because he didn't get the full build-up in spring training because he did miss a few days when his wife had gave birth to their child. And so, like, okay. Like, there are reasons for it. And you don't expect starting pitchers at the very beginning of the season to go long.
I didn't even think twice about that decision. When it happened, I just assumed they were going to do that. He was out of the game after 6. Great job. It's March 29th. It's cold. There's no world in which he's coming. Not in 2024. It just doesn't work.
It doesn't happen. Right? And I'm with you on that. I actually think that I'm okay with Rob making that decision. So you go to Matt Strom and you bring in Strom, right? And he gives up a couple of base runners. And now you got 2nd and 3rd with 1 out. And Adam Duvall comes off the bench to pinch hit for Jared Kelenic. All right? Now, they said they knew that he was going to pinch hit. Like Thompson says after the game, we knew they were going to pinch hit for Kelenic. Okay. You had Jeff Hoffman ready to go in the bullpen. He was obviously going to come into the game to face Acuna, who is the next batter anyway.
Yeah.
When you bring in Duvall, who's a...
One out, by the way, left, right? So he's coming into the game no matter what in this inning.
Right.
You know, he's going.
Unless there's a line drive double play, right? Exactly. He's coming. We're a sack or fly ball throw out at the plate. That's the only two ways he's not coming in. Why do you let Duvall face a lefty? Duvall notoriously kills left-handed pitchers. And I know Matt Strom is good against both lefties and righties. I get it. And you trust him, right? And he's been good for you last year. And in the spring, he was really good. So I get it. But you have Hoffman ready. He is a guy who has made his bones with you last year as a guy you bring into sticky situations and get out of them. That's a decision to me that's where it went wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think I looked at you while that was unfolding. I said, is it not weird that Hoffman's not in this game? I mean, in real time. And that's one of the things that I kind of wrote about today. I sent out the Red October newsletter that kind of hit mailboxes around 9:30 this morning. And I said, you know, listen, there are a lot of things that you can be frustrated about and aggravated about the way things played out this weekend. I'm not a big second guess every move that a manager makes kind of guy. I am, however, someone who in real time will say, I just don't agree with this. And when that happens, that's when I'll come on the show and kind of look at a move like this. Like, this was one that I said, I don't get it. It makes no sense to me in real time. And maybe Strom gets out Duvall, right? And then they go to Hoffman and it works out, lead protected. But in real time, I just said, this is insane. Even if it works out, it makes no sense to me. I know, Rob, after the game, you had said it like, well, we like the matchup.
He liked Strom's pitches.
Yeah.
Against Duvall.
And I know that that's a thing in modern baseball that they look at. It's not just as simple as lefty, lefty, righty, righty. It's his stuff, his spin, his break profiles well against a certain swing path, against a certain profile of a hitter. And I do get that. I know they're looking at numbers, and it's not just Rob Thompson saying, I trust my guy Matt here. He's going to go get him. I know that. But come on.
Yeah. All right. It just made perfect sense to me. You had Hoffman up and ready. They were actually warming both of them up, if you remember, Bob, in the sixth inning when Wheeler was still on the mound. Both Strom and Hoffman were both warming up. So there was a debate, I think, internally as to which guy to go to in which situation. Right. I think if Wheeler let somebody get on base, they were going to go to Hoffman. Why? Because he's really good at getting out of those spots, right? And if they were going to go to a clean inning, it was going to be Strom, which is what it ended up being. But then you have him ready. Why not go to him in the spot that, you know, Duvall does not hit righties. It really does not hit righties. And so it's like, it just didn't make sense. Like, so I think that that's where that game kind of went off the rails. Right.
By the way, I mean, you also don't expect, and then there's the portion of this where guys have to do what they're paid to do. I mean, Jose Alvarado, who I love, I think he's one of the 10 best relievers in baseball, but he was a disaster on Friday. He couldn't locate on the inner half to right-handers. And then that game gets totally lit on fire once they go to Brogdon, who probably would not be on this team had it not been for, a couple injuries. So, I mean, he was terrible. And then the game just totally gets out of control there. But I will say, and I don't know if you want to talk about this at all, I have no problem with Rob going to Connor Brogdon in that spot. Once a game gets to 4-2, once you fall behind, once you have, I think, Alvarado burned for Saturday, you're not going to have him at that point. Hoffman's been used. Strom's been used. I don't know what – I feel like you can't go for broke down 4-2 chasing the Braves in the seventh inning or, you know, in the eighth inning at this point. So I don't mind going to Brogdon just because you don't know what you're going to look like and how you're set up for the next game.
Well, see, that's the thing. And this was one of the debates that I had with in my story that's on the site. So you're in a situation where Alvarado obviously is fighting it a little bit, and he walks in the run to make it 4-2. And even at that point, I thought this is probably one batter too many. Yeah. I thought he could have come out after the previous batter, actually probably two batters before he actually struck out Arcia, right? But you were trying to hold on to Dominguez for Saturday. And that's the thing. It's like, against the Braves, do you really look at, and the first game of the season, are you really thinking, let's worry about the stuff down the line, or do you worry about what's in front of you and figure out tomorrow? Yeah. And that's where I sit there and say, they could have at least tried to stay in the game if you get Dominguez up to face these righties at the bottom instead of letting Alvarado throw 30 pitches. Yeah. And really his 30th was the hit by Acuna that puts the game, makes it 5-2, and then Brogdon, you know, like you said, you know, pours gas on the fire. But at that point it's 4-2, okay.
And then it's Brogdon first pitch, wild pitch, 5-2.
That's what it was. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So but if you are willing to go to Dominguez there, not to say that he would have been better. Obviously he's not gotten off to a great start.
Didn't
himself.
Have a great weekend, no.
But you're looking at it and saying, okay, we obviously see that Alvarado doesn't have his stuff.
Right.
Right. And he's fighting it a little bit. Why let him get to 30 pitches with the 30th pitch against Ronald Acuna when you can bring in a fresh arm that maybe, I mean, it's not a great scenario, but it's better than what it ended up being. I'm just saying that it keeps you in the game. Doesn't mean that the Phillies come back and win, but once you go to Brogdon, you might as well have just chalked up the loss at that point.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. What was interesting to me was coming out of the opener, just listening to the disappointment and the reactions. You know, I understand that this is the Braves. It's game one. Everyone's juiced up for it. But, you know, this idea that, well, this bullpen sucks. They didn't do enough. Rob Thompson isn't the right guy. Again, he makes a terrible decision that sinks his team. I mean, and we talked about this last week, that fans were going to probably be tough and be critical. perhaps even overreact a little bit moment to moment. And I thought we saw that a little bit this weekend. It was ugly. And, you know, I even said at one point during Saturday's game, like, this is kind of embarrassing. It is. Like, this is not how you want to start a season, especially when all eyes are on you and how you start and coming out fast. So it was less than ideal, but I was surprised at the level of animosity that I kind of heard on the radio, saw on Twitter, saw on Facebook. Maybe I'm not surprised by what I saw on Facebook, but I was just surprised at the overall way that the game was digested. It had a very NFL vibe to it. It had an Eagles post-game vibe to it after a loss. And, you know, so which one is it? Is the bullpen trash? You know, because they had one bad game on Friday and they were bad. Trust me, they were bad. And I know things kind of got away from them on Saturday. The game wasn't really competitive, so I don't know how much I need to evaluate that. They come back yesterday, though, four innings, one run. I mean, of the five guys, the five relievers they used for them were really sharp. Dominguez struggled and they worked around it. So, you know, is this the best bullpen in baseball again after they shut down the Braves for four innings yesterday? Which one is it? Why are we going to go with Friday and not what we saw on Sunday? Like, I just feel like everyone needs to. I wrote about it today. Like, I hate when people say, like, it's one of 162, it's April, or it's March. You can't react to what you see. Like, you're allowed to react. Be angry, be happy, get excited when they win. Like, it's cool, but there's, like, you got to find some balance, right? Like,
sure.
These, like, wholesale statements, same old Phillies, just fucking like, come on.
Yeah, that's where it's wrong. That's where it's just too much. And I agree. Like,
but is there anything worse than the writer, the sports writer, or like the fan that's like, you should know better? It's March 29th. There are a couple guys doing that this weekend too, by the way. Like, there's one guy that I really like too, and I'm not gonna say his name, but I'm like, all right, man, like, we know. Like, I don't need a lesson on the calendar. Like, we know what day it is. But people are allowed to be upset.
Yeah, no, you could be upset in the moment, but don't. I think where it goes too far is it's an overreaction to one thing that you now make that shape how you feel about that going forward for the for going into the future. So in other words, these guys had the bullpen had a bad first game Friday, so now everybody's going to say the bullpen's not good. Until it gets to be like sensational, there's going to be doubt that creeps in, and that's where I think it's wrong. That's where I think when you let it shape your future thinking of this team, that's where you've let it go too far.
By the way, again, and I have a ton of bad takes, and they can be circled and rehashed and spit back at me. But I did say last week, like, watch out with this bullpen, especially early on. Yeah. You're not going to get a lot of length from the back end. When you get through that first wave, they're going to be conservative with how they use the relievers. And I said it. I'm like, you have Marte, Ortiz, Brogdon. I'm like, if you get to these guys, you're going to have a chance to do some damage against this bullpen. Now, I didn't expect Strom and Alvarado to melt down on Friday. I didn't. That's not what I was expecting. But once you get to those guys, those lower leverage arms, here comes Nick Nelson now for Ortiz. Like, that's not lockdown. And when you have three or four of those guys running around out there in your bullpen, I don't expect the Phillies to have a top five bullpen ERA at the end of April. I certainly don't now, but I never did in the first place.
Yeah.
I still think when you look at this group of arms, though, and the way that they're going to be able to mix and match and miss bats, that there's a lot of upside there. Are they the best in baseball? No. And I think that the worst thing that probably could have happened is seeing that graphic come out from MLB Network last week saying that this is the best group. But are they good? Is that upside real? It sure is. And like, if you watch one game and decide, no. Man, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Like, did you not watch last year? I know they weren't perfect. They struggled, especially for stretches. And at the end, it fell apart. But bullpen was pretty damn good last year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if you know, keep in mind, too, that they're really down at least one guy in that pen with Kirkering not ready yet.
This
right?
guy you're talking about, we might use this guy to close games. Or, like, we might bring him in crucial high-leverage spots in the seventh or later, and he's not out there, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it does make a difference.
It certainly does. I think that they're a little bit missing something on the right side because Hoffman right now is the only really, really reliable guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you hope Dominguez can be. He was just a little off again. It's, like, a little frustrating there. And then you don't really have that third.
Listen, I don't want to pile on the guy either because I don't think he's, like, a main part of this moving forward, but they find themselves in a similar situation let's go Marte over Brogdon. Like, let's go Nick Nelson over Brogdon. If Andrew Bilotti finds his way back up here at some point, like, I just, Brogdon, I find to just be especially disappointing given where he was and where it seemed like he was going versus where he's at now. And I was really surprised that he was on this team, even with the injuries.
I was too. I think they just didn't want to DFA him, Bob. Yeah. I think that they feel there's like that little last hope that maybe he can find it again, because he does have good stuff and he's got talent, and they just need to kind of figure it out with him. But they're not going to be incredibly patient. I would have to assume that as soon as Kirkring comes back, he gets DFA'd if he hasn't had a better performance or two before that point. The one thing about Saturday's game that I think is interesting is how the two managers handled the starting pitchers. Because it was obvious that neither Max Fried nor Aaron Nola had great stuff. Fried gets pulled after seven batters, and Jesse Chavez comes in and pitches three innings, does a pretty good job for the Braves, gets the win in the game, and Nola stays in the game and gives up the most hits he's ever given up in a start, and 12 hits, seven earned runs. And you can look at that start and you sit there and say, you know, here's Nola, you know, doing Nola type things. When it snowballs on him, it really snowballs on him. Mm-hmm. And there was a little bit of bad luck in there. I don't want to make it sound like he was a disaster, because he wasn't a disaster. It was a little bit of bad luck. Of the 12 hits, only four were hit over 90 miles per hour. Right. Yeah. I look at that Ozzie Albies home run and I say, that's a great pitch. It really was a great pitch. And Albies has proved to me this weekend he's a great bad ball hitter.
Yeah, he's a tremendous player. Everyone talks about Acuna and Riley and Olsen, and I get it, right? Yeah. And warranted. But, man, I almost feel like that guy gets overlooked.
Yeah. The home run against Suarez on Sunday.
He was
so out in front of it, and he still put it over the wall. Like, I mean, so those are good pitches that he hit for home runs. That said, the pitch to Olsen by Nolson was not by Nola was not good. That was a bad pitch. You did get four balls hit at 100 miles per hour like that. And you didn't miss bats. And that's the thing that, like, he's got to get some more swing and miss. So it falls on him. But I thought it was interesting how Snicker got rid of his guy quick. So yeah, he just doesn't have it. Let's move on to the bullpen. And Rob was like, "Well, I got to save the bullpen." And let Nola give up those. I think once you give up the extra two runs, you give up the first five, okay, or whatever. But once you give up those extra two runs in the third inning, I think that puts the game kind of a little bit of distance between the two teams in the game.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I don't have it in me, especially in this show, to go into the Aaron Nola discussion. I just don't want to. I think it was disappointing. There's no way to
sign
a big contract. You're like, all right. It was a rough season. It finished on a strong note, except for the final time we saw him. And it was like, okay, we're turning the page. I expect him to have a good year. And so it was disappointing to see. You're immediately in a hole. They get you back a lead. You can't hold it. Yeah, and I know that there was a bad luck element involved, but it was disappointing. However, if it were any other starter making an appearance on March 30th, I don't think we would even really blink at it. We just say, tough start. Let's see what happens next time he gets the ball. Because it's this guy, and because there's so much, he's a lightning rod. Like the takes on Aaron Nola, it's like either the blind defense or he can't do anything right, even when he rips off five great starts down the stretch to push you to the brink of a NLCS or a brink of a World Series. Like, there's no credit that's given to him. And I just feel like, three starts, then I'll engage on the Aaron Nola.
You're right, Bob. But look, there's the microscope is going to be on him more. The spotlight's going to be on him.
I mean, it's a monster deal.
You sign that contract, you've got it. You've got to perform.
Got to earn it. And last year wasn't good. And it was objectively a disappointing season for him. And so you want to see him get out to that start. Like, let's go. Show us that you're this guy. And you know, you're staring down the barrel at 7 years, and that's the way it starts. Like, that too is disappointing. But I don't know. I just don't have it in me to be like, here we go again, or, oh, this is now a problem. Or when every executive or every evaluator around the sport tells you the strength of this Phillies team is 1-2 at the top, I just would be surprised if all of a sudden this was going to fall apart on him again.
Yeah, right. And keep in mind that the Braves offered a contract worth more money than the Phillies did. So, you know, for all the you know, the negatives that people want to find about him, that there were teams that really wanted Aaron Nola and contenders that really wanted Aaron Nola. So there's a reason that for that. But moving on to yesterday, here are a couple other things that drove me nuts yesterday, even though they won the game. All right. So obviously let's talk, look at the lineup to start things off. Okay. No Harper, no Stott, no Marsh. Now, the Marsh can't hit lefties thing. I'm kind of with the Phillies on that. Like, until he proves that he can, I'm okay with them doing a little bit of a platoon kind of thing with him. And I don't think that playing against the Braves is the time to find out if he can hit against lefties, right? I mean, I just think that that's right. That's what it is. So you're okay with that.
You're cool with Brandon Marsh one time this weekend.
Yeah, I'm okay with that a little bit. The Bryson Stott one is the one that really bothers me. And Harper we'll get to in a minute because I think that's a whole different scenario. But the Stott one is the one that bothers me. The guy hit lefties last year. Like, he hit them.
Yeah.
And so, like, I know that they protected him a little bit against, like, real tough lefties. But let's talk – Chris Sale is not the Chris Sale of old.
Right.
He's just not. So why are we protecting him against that guy? Like, you know, I would think that Fried would have been a tougher matchup for Stott than Sale at this point. And yet he still gets taken out of the game. Of course he gets in. He gets a couple of the bats. He draws a big walk that starts the rally. Whatever. But the point is that – like, I don't understand why he's got to be out of a lineup day three. He's one of your top players. And then, of course, the whole Harper thing, where they announced it pregame. Thompson announces pregame as a scheduled day off.
Are you buying that?
Well, no, but wait, it gets better. It gets better, Bob. So then after that, after the game, he's asked if Harper was available to pinch hit, and he said no. He's a little banged up from the fall into the camera well yesterday. Well, then we talked to Harper after the game, and he says, no, Rob told you it was a scheduled day off. The fall into the camera well had nothing to do with it. So what is it?
Yeah.
Like, who's gaslighting who here? Like, so that's a concern for me. That's, to me, far, far more than who's in the lineup and who's batting where. The fact that you can't sync up your message between manager and star player as to what exactly is going on the third game of the season is a concern for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I was curious. It was. And you wonder, was that off day driven by Bryce Harper? Hey, I need a day. Or was it, we're going to protect you from yourself? But I do think, independent of this decision, because assuming that they play tonight, which I believe they will, and assuming he's in the lineup, which indications are he will be, okay. Like, I'm not overly concerned that he missed the game, but the fact that they weren't on the same page and they were not able to communicate it outward, that is a little bit strange and a little bit concerning. You know, I think I fashion myself as a Rob Thompson supporter. I think he does a good job. I think that really, more so than even the tactical maneuvers, it's about the clubhouse and how he manages things and how he cultivates the respect. And we talk about the vibes with this team. I think he's really important in all of that. I thought Rob Thompson was dreadful this weekend. I really did. On a lot of fronts. And you talk about decisions. Does Rob Thompson just not respect Adam Duvall? Like, what was the approach? You talk about the decision to leave Strom in the game on Friday.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what came up with the Phillies trailing 2-1,
yeah,
scuffling at the plate, not hitting. You feel like every run's going to matter in this game. And Phillies, I thought, kind of gave one away when the Braves went up 3-1. You want to walk us through that one?
Yeah, because I was one that I even tweeted about. I was actually sitting there next to the King, as always. And I said to Howard when it happened, you know, you got Riley on second with two outs. Phillies are down a run, fourth inning. And Ranger Suarez is facing Adam Duvall, who's in the starting lineup. And I know we're talking about Adam Duvall like he's Babe Ruth here, but the reality of it is that the guy hits left-handed pitching. On deck is Michael Harris, a left-handed batter who Ranger Suarez has a history of just locking down, you know, Harris does not hit Ranger Suarez well at all.
He's 1-for-18 in his career against him.
Okay,
now.
Like really not good against him. And they decided to pitch to Duvall. Like, why not walk Duvall there? And I'm not the only one who said this. If you listen to the radio broadcast, Fransky in L.A. were the same thing. They were questioning why not walk him to get to the matchup with Harris. Duvall gets a single and the run scores, and now the Braves are up 2 runs again. And now all of a sudden you're starting to think, if we don't have this comeback in us, you're going to get swept.
Yeah.
And all because you could have preserved a run there just with the intentional walk. And I know the Phillies don't like to use the intentional walk. They don't do it a lot, right? And I know it's kind of been phased out a little bit in baseball. I don't understand why. I think it's a perfectly legitimate strategy, especially when you have that kind of matchup behind you or on that point in the game. Right, trying to make sure you don't get down by more than a run. It just didn't make any sense, and it cost the Phillies. I think that was a spot that you could have used that move.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, and I'm kind of going through it like pitch by pitch. He does get out ahead of him, like, you know, he's 1-2, then he's 2-2, tries to put him away with a sinker, then he tries to put him away with a fastball and misses, and then you get to a full count. And to me, at that point, it's just like you can't give in. Like, the way that the at-bat progresses, it's like, once you jump out ahead, okay, you try to put them away, you work it up to a full count, you get to the 7th pitch of an at-bat, it's not a great matchup as it is, you have a great matchup on deck. It's just like, just the way it played out is frustrating. I know some people would say, listen, I'm not going to walk a guy with 2 strikes, but I think that once the at-bat gets deep enough, you just turn the page and say, the longer this guy's in there, the more pitches he sees, the probability of this not ending well is increasing on us.
Let me throw this at you too, Bob. This is another thing. So Suarez ends up throwing 83 pitches yesterday, 5 mm-hmm. innings, right? Let's take those 7 pitches away from Adam Duvall.
Yep.
Now, are you able to go a 6th inning with Ranger Suarez?
Yeah, you might bring him back out. Yeah, I mean, he was really good yesterday. That's what you say. You look at Zach Wheeler and you're like, well, the box score shows you that he was really good. You look at the box and you go, okay, like, you know, few earned runs, 5 innings. He didn't get that deep into the game. But he was good, and his stuff was good. And the Braves had a lot of awkward swings against him yesterday.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I mean, was his stuff good enough that he could have pitched into the 6th? You save a few more? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, like, I think that there's a combination of things there that were really questionable. And then the last one, and I actually asked about this twice in the post-game press conference because I just needed clarification for what Rob was saying to me. So there's a new rule in baseball in 2024 where – if you put a pitcher out to warm up at the start of an inning, he has to face at least one batter. You can't, you know, change the pitcher because they decide to pinch hit. So we're going into the 7th inning, right? And the Braves put Joe Jimenez back on the mound. He had gotten 2 outs at the end of the 6th inning. And Snicker puts him back out there, even though he's got Aaron Bummer warming up in the bullpen. And puts Jimenez out. And the Phillies had Sosa, Pache, and Rojas scheduled to hit. So the Phillies decide to pinch hit with Stott to start the inning. Okay, fine. Works a walk. Then they decide to pinch hit with Marsh, at which point Snicker goes and gets Bummer. Right. Now you have Marsh facing lefties.
Exact situation that you don't want him in.
You went out of your way to not play the guy.
Yes.
Okay. Now you could have gone Marsh as the first pinch hitter. Because then he gets to face, Jimenez cannot come out of the game. Yeah. He's got to face Marsh. So you would get Marsh against a righty. And then if you go Stott for Pache, right? Then they go to Bummer, at least you have a guy who can hit lefties like Stott can. So I asked Rob about this and he said, well, I wanted to go position for position.
Okay.
So Stott for Rojas, Sosa, which isn't really position for position, but they knew they were moving Merrifield over to third base and Stott at second. And then Marsh would go for Pache into the outfield. And when he said that, like, I had to think about it for a second. Like, what the hell does it matter if you go position for position, if you're pinch hitting both guys, right? I mean, they're both coming into the game. Does it matter who goes where?
Yeah.
And then I followed up and asked this. I just need to know, like, was the second pinch hit dependent upon the outcome of the first? And he said yes. So in other words, the way it was, you know, we talked about it afterwards, was if Stott got an extra base hit, then Marsh would not have batted for Pache. because then you would have been in scoring position. You could have either bunted him over or maybe, you know, try to just drive him in with nobody out if he's on third, or if he hits a home run and ties the game, you stick with the defensive outfield. Okay, fine. But it's still a scenario worth looking at down the road, because if that's the situation now where they put a right hand, you're going with your right-handed lineup and you got lefty bats on the bench and you got more than one left-handed option, and they put the right-hander back out there, I think you got to think about going Marsh first if you're going to use two pinch hitters, just so that you don't get that left. Because what did he end up doing? I'm striking out.
Yeah. I will say of all of these things, I was surprised. I mean, I guess I'm not surprised, but I'm confused. I just do not understand. Like, there's a lot of talk on WIP today about the Phillies flying the 2023 wild card flag out in center field, right? And now it's soft, and this is a joke, and this isn't what you're supposed to do when you're, you know, you have a competitive nature. Are the Phillies trying to fly at least Johan Rojas played flag at the end of this season? Like, all three games? Like, I don't need to see him all three games. He can't hit. He was 0-for-8 this weekend, 2 strikeouts. His contact, like, you talk about exit velo, it was like 75 miles an hour. His contact was dreadful. Like, this is not a guy. I have no problem with him being on this team. I have no problem with him getting the bulk of starts because you like his defense. What the Phillies are selling, like, I'll buy it to a degree, but is this really a guy that commands starting the entire, you're talking about the Braves, right? The urgency. We've got to beat the Atlanta Braves. I know the alternatives aren't wonderful, but, like, come on. He can't hit.
Yeah. He didn't even hit a ball out of the infield in the entire weekend. And I just thought, like, you know, Rob went out of his way to make sure that, you know, it was the first question, and he wanted to say, I want to make sure that was the most important play in the game, that he beat out the double play.
And it ball. Was. That's great. But he also hit into a little pisser that should have been a double play. Like, that's the problem, right? Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's one thing to say, Grant, great hustle, good job, kid. But my God, you shouldn't be hitting into the double play and killing the rally to begin with.
Like, kudos to him for going down the line, like, getting down the line. He's got good speed. That's awesome. And, like, I got to be clear here. I'm not saying that he won't be able to hit or that he won't be a good player. Like, I'm not trying to bury him. Play him. But
yeah.
Come on. And is that really the bar? Like, that Rob, like, listen, I know you got to go to bat for your guys, especially when they're the focus of attention. And I know there's been a lot of talk around Johan Rojas, and Rob probably feels like, I'm going to take the extra step to go out there and pump this guy up and try to give him a little jolt. Like, I have no problem with Rob highlighting the fact that Rojas busted it down the line and helped make that inning work. Cool. There's no problem with the manager doing that. But, like, honestly, man, like, this is also a city and a fan base and a media that, come on. Like, you say that, like, people aren't going to roll their eyes, you know, and that's my problem. Like, that's my thing with it. I hope that they play the guy and he figures it out and all of that. But I was surprised he played all three games. I didn't think there was any reason other than it was opening day and, you know, it's a ceremonial thing. And let's say that he started on opening day. Like, he shouldn't have been playing against Spencer Strider on Friday. There's no reason for him to start that game against Spencer Strider. That did not give the Phillies their best chance to win that game. It just doesn't.
No, it just doesn't. I agree. And it's going to be interesting to see now that, you know, they're going to start facing some back ends of rotations. They got some bad teams coming up here in April, not necessarily bad teams, but weaker teams, I should say. It'll be interesting to see how much longer this goes if he's still not hitting against some, you know, fair to middling pitching, what they end up doing. Because you can sit there and say, okay, well, it was the Braves. The Braves have some really good pitching. But how does he end up doing against the Reds and the Nationals?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, again,
the White Sox, right? Like, what's that going to look like?
It would be unfair for me to come on here and say you can't overreact to what you saw from the bullpen the first time out or this weekend. And so, I guess, in fairness to him, you can't overreact based on what you saw in 8 at-bats. But I think you can also when you work back throughout the entire spring and then work back to last postseason. Like, the starting point here isn't, I think he's going to be a good hitter. Oh, he didn't have a good weekend. I don't know that he can hit. He didn't hit. So, like, I'm just where I was, I guess, a few days ago. It's not like I'm putting it all on what I just saw, but it was evidence that did not change my line of thinking. And that's the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I guess I know the answer to this. There are probably some people, I know a couple of our listeners. I mean, I actually wanted to go back and address this. I got a DM saying, like, you know, same old Phillies. You and I were both tagged in a comment yesterday that was like, you might want to revise your World Series predictions, guys. Like, that, first of all, thanks for listening. And like, that's cool. And I hear you, you know, like, I get it. I totally understand, but relax.
Yeah. I thought you weren't allowed to do that. I thought you weren't allowed to say it's just March. Or just April 1st, whatever.
I mean, like, I do. I understand. Like, okay. And I actually appreciate, I do, and I mean this, like, I'm totally sincere when I say this. I appreciate that someone watched the Phillies game yesterday and thought so much of us to be like, fuck those guys. I'm gonna make them eat this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, an hour later, the Phillies have their first win because that's what happens. They're going to get swept. They're going to get, this team sucks.
Yeah.
And then you, like, have we learned nothing?
I know. It's crazy.
Where do you, like, okay, you said that nothing would change unless they got swept. They did not. Anything change for you? Like, did anything happen that really surprised you this weekend that makes you feel a little bit different moving forward?
No. I just want to keep monitoring the Harper thing because I'm not convinced that it's just from the tumble into the.
You said something interesting to me on Friday, and I don't want to blow up your spot or anything. It's not classified information, but you said Bryce Harper didn't look right all spring.
Yeah, he didn't. He didn't. I mean, look, the 11 days I was down there, I didn't see the typical Bryce Harper, and he certainly has seemed frustrated a little bit. And I'm just wondering maybe if whatever this back thing that has come up, it came up a little bit last year, came up again during the spring, if it's not something that's a little bit more than they're leading on. And, you know, he didn't have a great first couple games, obviously.
No.
Maybe they feel like, maybe it was a scheduled day off. Maybe they really looked at it and said, you need a blow here because it's just not responding the way it should be responding. We'll see. Like, that's the one thing that, you know, that could be a change your opinion kind of situation if it turns out to be something that it's more than just, oh, he'll be fine day to day kind of thing.
Yeah, they better hope not. That's for sure. Okay. Anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here?
I got one last thing.
Okay.
And I just wanted to throw this one out there just because the Pirates are doing it again, Bob. Got off to another great start. Remember last year they got off to that super start and then they collapsed and, you know, ended up being at the bottom of the NL Central. I just wanted to point out that the one start that really kind of impressed me against the Marlins was the rookie kid, Jared Jones, makes his major league debut, strikes out 10 in a major league debut. Like, that's pretty impressive, you know, and everybody was kind of surprised that he even made the team. You know, he's a prospect, but I mean, they were kind of surprised that he was the guy that made the team, especially with Paul Skeens, right? That's the guy that they drafted out of LSU.
Yep, the LSU kid.
Yeah.
And they actually have another guy in their system, a South Jersey kid, Bishop Eustace, Anthony Solometto, I believe is their number 4 prospect. Lefty, funky, good stuff, nasty. I mean, they've got some interesting pieces coming in that rotation. If that all folds, folds into place, they have 3 pretty young arms there. They're very interesting.
Yeah, and not only that, they've started to lock up guys. You know, for a team that never spends money, they're starting to lock up some of their own. Reynolds got that big contract, and Keller's got that contract now. So I'm just curious. You know, we got teased by it at the beginning of last year, and then, of course, they fell apart. 3 games in. Are the Pirates maybe getting a little bit better?
Yeah, we'll see. You know, there were 2 things that jumped out to me around the league over the weekend. Beyond that, if you're a big run differential guy, you're not going to be impressed with the Tigers. But 3 one-run wins for the Tigers over the White Sox, some good at-bats late, some rallies. They had a nice little weekend. White Sox are probably going to be dreadful. But it was a nice start for them. I know we talked about them on the show last week as maybe being a little bit better than people are giving them credit for. But how do you talk about what happened around the league this weekend and not talk about what happened at Citi Field? Just incredible. First of all, the Mets are The Mets just never cease to amaze me, man. Like, they are an absolute loser poverty franchise in every sense of the word. You know, it was funny. I was a good friend of mine is a big time Mets fan. And we were going back and forth on Saturday as Rhys Hoskins is just dominating them a day after blowing up Jeff McNeil. And he says to me, he goes, they're not going to hit him. They're not going to throw at him. He's going to go off on them today. And then what they'll do is at the end of the game, they'll throw at him. And lo and behold, that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was just so Mickey Mouse, Bush League. Like, and he gets swept. Like, he gets swept at home. Like, and that team is perfectly built to win like 79 games. Like, if your goal in life was like, let's build an 80 win team, it is that Mets team, man. Like, what a joke. Like, the whole thing, I feel like, to borrow, you said we sit next to the king when we go to the games. What an absolute fraud joke that team is.
It's great. It's great. And I love picking on the Mets. Always love picking on
Rhys
the Mets.
Hoskins, too, man. I'm rooting for him. You know, I wasn't always, like, the number one Rhys guy. Like, I thought there were some holes in his game that kind of hurt the Phillies at times. No doubt a really good offensive player and somebody that I think is probably going to get a multi-year deal following the season. I also don't believe in the Brewers despite this little start. I wouldn't be shocked if he got moved somewhere this summer. But it was nice to see him go out there and kick some ass this weekend. I know a lot of people were probably rooting for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm glad you were the one who brought up the Mets and not me. Because I'm usually the one who picks on the Mets, but that's all right. It's good that you did it. So,
all right. Well, there you go. We will be back later this week, Thursday or Friday, probably, kind of break down everything that happened against the Reds. This Reds team's not bad, by the way. Yeah. I know we're talking about this soft April schedule, but Philly's got to play some decent baseball this week if they want to win this series. So we will be back after that to break down everything that happened and look ahead. You can check us out on YouTube, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. You can follow Anthony at AntSamPhilly. You can follow me at Bob_Wankel on Twitter, and we'll talk to you soon.